shit, shit, shit show. It's a fucking shit show. Shit show.
Welcome back to Shit Show Saturday. We have Shit Show Carly, aka Carrie. Welcome. I just learned so much interesting shit about you. I actually might include some of that stuff because I think it's kind of fascinating. So do you mind if I share some of that basket?
No, you go, girl.
Okay,
you do it.
Wonderful. Song.
Song.
Like, I know what you're going to say. Are you going to say this, what you said the other day?
No, I'm not. Actually, can you walk out to that? That's pretty slow. Like, isn't it supposed to be like a sports thing where you... No, I'm not doing that. I like really angry music. So this was a tough one for me, but there's a semi-angry song by Emmy called Stupid Big Teeth. Have you ever heard of it?
No.
Oh, it's really good.
Stupid Big Teeth.
Stupid Big Teeth by Emmy. Yeah.
Okay.
It's only semi.
I'm interested to hear that. A semi, you said a semi-angry song?
Yeah. she's dealing with her anger in the song, so it's perfect. Yeah.
Okay. That's a good title. Carbohydrate.
Oh man, if I could live on potato chips, I would be so happy.
What kind?
I would need a variety. Yeah, I would need a variety. It doesn't really matter as long as it's chippy and fried.
But like, what are you going? Like, what's your go-to? You're like at the gas station. I'm ready for a good bag of chips. What are we grabbing here?
Depends on the day.
Are we what about like, are we doing all different flavors?
Yeah, like I could do all different flavors. I mean, I love a kettle chip. Like I love salt and vinegar sometimes. Mm-hmm. Plain sometimes. When we travel, we've been known to go to grocery stores and spend, you know, 10 minutes of time in the chip aisle. Seeing what the, you know, country is telling us about themselves with the chip.
Cheese.
Oh, well, I do live in Quebec.
Here we go, curd.
No, God, no. I don't understand that at all. I like an old cheddar on a daily basis, but my favorite cheese is called Saint Aigure, and it's like this creamy blue kind of thing. Yeah, so good.
Okay. Like a blue cheese with a brie consistency?
It's even, yeah, crumbly brie consistency.
Okay. Condiment. You're avoidant. Do you align with the theory?
Yeah. Is it mustard? It's mustard, right?
Yeah. But like, do you not like, you're just kind of like, you don't need a ton of condiments.
I don't, but I do use a lot of sriracha.
Okay. You got, this is a very valid, I still have not figured out what I'm doing with this, but this shit is real.
I think you need to document it, you know, as a PhD student.
I agree. Okay. So how did you find out that you were an adult child?
Well, like most people in this community, I've always known. Mm-hmm. But a year ago, my current therapist, who I had just found in my second session, said to me, "Have you ever explored any adult child stuff?" And I had no idea what it was. And so then I did the deep dive and just like Googled everything I could. I found your podcast. I started listening to it. Then I joined ACA, like literally a year ago this week, I joined ACA.
Really?
Yeah.
And had you moved yet? You had already moved at that point,
yeah.
Right?
Okay. Yeah. I'd been here for 3.5 years.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But the move was really helpful too, right? Because everything, it just loosened everything up. And I started to understand that I was no longer living in my parents' world. I was living in my world.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of put everything into perspective. So, but yeah.
Were you going to local meetings, like in person?
No, because I don't speak French.
Oh, are there many?
I live in the middle of nowhere. So no, I don't think there are. I've never looked. You know, the closest I got was I went to a Quaker meeting in Montreal once, but it's not really the same thing.
Prior to that, did you have any sort of 12-step exposure? No.
I've been in therapy for a long time, trying to figure out what's wrong with me. And I've had so many therapists.
Mm-hmm.
So many therapists over the years, and good ones and bad ones, and no one at any point brought up the adult child stuff. Mind you, I had never mentioned that my father was an alcoholic because he's never talked about it with me. So the only reason I mean, obviously he drank a lot when I was growing up, but the only reason I know that he is now in AA and that, you know, the reason he doesn't drink anymore is because he's an alcoholic. The only reason I know that is because my sister let it slip.
Really?
A DUI, and he had his car taken away from him, and that he's in AA. And so, because, you know, family secrets, right?
God, if it only would take so many people just one DUI to do the trick.
I'm not sure that was his only one, but.
So what was it that led you? So it was your second session with that therapist. What was it that led you into starting to work with her? Was it the stuff with your sister-in-law?
Yeah.
You were just looking for a new therapist.
My sister-in-law, and then like 14 months ago, 15 months ago, you know, well, my sister-in-law, I mentioned in group, she tried to kill herself.
And when was that?
That was September, like a year ago, last September.
Okay.
And we were really close. Like, we were best friends. We spent every day together, you know, and
Really close with her before you moved? Like, did you always have a good relationship with her?
We were close, but then when we moved here, she was basically my only friend. Like, yeah. We used to live on her property. When we first moved here, we lived on her property, and, you know, it's my husband's sister. So we chose this house because it's proximity to her house, and spent hours together talking about relationships and hunting for mushrooms in the forest. You know, it's really romantic, this picture that I'm painting, but you know, I was with her the day before she took the mason jar full of pills and washed it down with, you know, a bottle of wine. And I had no idea it was coming. I had no idea.
Did you have any idea that she was struggling?
No fucking clue. I knew they were having, there was issues. I knew there was issues. But, you know, we talked about them so openly that I just assumed the suicide thing was never, you know, and she maintained afterwards that it was an accident, and we know that that wasn't true. And it's just really, I feel funny talking about it because it's not my trauma, right?
Yeah.
But it is.
Well, it affected you.
Because, you know, she had been hoarding pills for 5 years. And then she told everybody it was an accident, and that it was a spur of the moment thing. And she wound up in a coma for 6 days she's someone who needs a lot of control over her image. You know, she's basically my mother. Mm-hmm. I understand that now, of course, in hindsight. And I remember being in the hospital. At this point, I started microdosing mushrooms, which is another story, and that changes your perspective on everything. But I remember being in the hospital, standing over her hospital bed, thinking if she lives, she's going to fucking hate this, because everybody mm-hmm. she knows loves standing over her bedside, talking, like debriefing about what happened and why this happened. She's going to fucking hate this. She's just going to go crazy when she comes out of this. And, you know, I saw so much dysfunction, mm-hmm. like right there in my face. And, you know, she came out of the coma and she went for like, I don't know, half a dozen therapy sessions, and she declared herself cured and fine. And she was, you know, and I was like, no, I don't think so.
Was everyone surprised?
There's a lot of people that don't know that it was a suicide attempt. Like, we tried our best to cover it up, you know, like, I'm a good girl, right? Like, I'm not telling family.
Like her husband, like, you know, the family, those who knew.
Well,
her husband completely surprised. No.
Yeah. No, I don't think so. Like, because she had told a few friends that she was, every time I talk about it, it's like, this is so fucked up. Like, this is, you know, and you just go back into it and you're like, wow, how could you be so blind? But she had told a few people, a few of her friends, that she was saving pills for a rainy day. And she alluded to the fact that it was about her chronic pain. But in the hospital, and this is one of the reasons that I don't speak to her anymore, because this came up, when she was in the hospital, her husband said, yeah, I heard from one of her friends that she was saving pills in case I ever wanted to leave her. And I said, oh my God, that's terrible. And so this is one of the conversations that came out when she was in the coma. And then afterwards, this came out that he had said this to me. And she was like, oh no, I have to fix that. I have to fix that. That was not true. I never said that. And I'm like, oh my God, this is so much. Like, my head just spins even now thinking about it. And I was at this point, you know, we had a conversation in my house and I was just heading into an ACA meeting on Zoom because I was in recovery at this point, stopped drinking because I saw so much dysfunction from the alcohol in this whole situation. Mm-hmm. I just decided I had to stop drinking. Mm-hmm. And we were in the house and she, I just looked at her and I thought that I don't care how much I love you. I don't care how much I care about you. You cannot be in my life if you're going to be like this. Like, I need to let you go. And this is, you know, like literally my only friend in Quebec. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I haven't spoken to her since. She sent me an email a couple months ago that was, I think she wrote it after a couple of glasses of wine, maybe a couple of bottles of wine, and I couldn't understand it. And, you know, she did make some valid points about when we were friends before I was in recovery, the things that I did that were wrong. And I own that. I really do. And I forgive myself from that. And I really hope that she gets to a healthy place. But yeah,
Two questions. So, I mean, obviously it sounds like the wool came, like whatever that expression is, the wool came out of your eyes or came off the eyes pretty quickly after this happened. It kind of seems like you started to see things pretty clearly, pretty quickly once this happened. So like when you reflect back and when you say things like, I didn't know what I didn't know, like what is it that you were like in denial about, or like, what were you not seeing that was actually there?
Manipulation. I don't know how much she was triggered, you know, like when we're exposed to trauma early in our life and then we get re-triggered, you know, that just, I mean, I think your thought process gets turned upside down. I don't know how much she was triggered before. I mean, I know that after the event, she tried a bunch of stuff. She tried to get, the triangulation was huge. And that was always there. And like, I'm guilty of that too, because I grew up in a house where triangulation was how my mother showed love. You know, she would mm-hmm. call my sister out for something behind her back, or, you know, now my nieces and my nephews, she would criticize them. And then, but that put me on a pedestal, right? So I understand that. So, but I started to see the triangulation. I started to understand that that was not something, there were other ways to relate to people, right? There were other ways. And so there was an incident, right before I lost contact, I stopped contacting her, where she tried to come between me and my husband. And I put up a boundary. And then she blasted through that boundary another time. And I put it up again. And I said, listen, this is not happening. And then she did it one more time. And I was like, I'm done. That's it. Mm-hmm. And now I understand. And I was starting to, at the time, understand what my triggers were as an adult child. Gossip, triangulation, like money, like those are my three main mm-hmm. problems, mm-hmm. my three main areas that I need to focus on and work on and understand more.
Mm-hmm. So how has this been like, because I know you've shared that, you know, your husband has been, you know, supportive of you and, you know, agrees with you, but like, what has this been like for him? How has this experience like been impacting him?
Yeah. Well, I think he's a lovely man.
Is he that?
Well, like, I'm just
a shit sandwich it. Right here. I see what you're doing.
Well, it's so hard, right? Because like doing this work is really, really hard. And like, I don't want to be inside my head half the time finding these realizations out. And then I think about him like being the partner of somebody who's like inside her head all the time, figuring these things out. And then like, I come up with some random shit. And like, sometimes you just don't want to talk about heavy shit, right?
Yes.
But I need to talk about heavy shit all the time. Like, I need to. Mm-hmm. And I think he's coming to his own realizations. He's been extremely patient with me, extremely supportive. I mean, from day one, right? But we've obviously been through shit, like I shared with you before we started talking officially. Like, we've been through a lot of shit together. So there's, you know, there's There's stuff. Marriages, relationships are hard, says
yes,
says an avoidant, right? Relationships are hard. He's good. I wouldn't trade him for anything.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
So would you say that's your ACA bottom?
Yeah. Yeah, because like 2 months after she came out of the coma, my mom had a heart attack and I had to go home. Uh-huh. And while I was there, my dad's just horrible to me. Horrible, horrible, horrible. And that then I saw more, like it was like a continuation of all the realizations. And and I was still drinking at that point. And I've always wanted to stop drinking, but I didn't know why I was drinking. And I knew that I couldn't stop drinking alcohol unless I fully understood why I was drinking to begin with. Mm. And then it was like circumstance just laid it out on the table in front of me. And I'm like, okay, this is what I'm drinking. Oh, this is really fucked up shit.
Well, let's backtrack. Let's talk about your childhood. Mm. Paint the picture.
Perfect middle class upbringing. Perfect.
No mother. Trauma.
No trauma at all. Like if you're standing outside our house where we grew up, you look at it and it's just like, yeah, happy, happy, joy, joy. But extremely, I grew up extremely detached from reality, always trying to escape. My father is the alcoholic. My mother is a narcissist. And my grandmother is some kind of piece of work, or was some kind of piece of work that nobody really
understands. On what side, mom or dad?
Dad.
Okay.
My mother was adopted, and she, her parents were quite lovely, although I don't remember a lot of my childhood. Uh-huh. Obvious reasons. I don't remember a lot of it. So I remember them, but only vaguely, you know, pictures of their house and stuff. They had a very, they were Salvation Army officers. So
really?
Yeah.
My parents, that's like a big, their big charity was always Salvation Army.
So, oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I did a lot of work with them.
My grandpa was the guy with the bells, you know.
Really?
Yeah. Really involved in the church. Very Baptist. So I don't remember them much, but my father's mother was just really, really abusive and horrible. And she took in a special dislike to me of all the grandkids, and just made it really, really acceptable to put me down. And my parents never said anything. In fact, they used to say, well, we can't do anything about it. She's too old to change, which I know is not true, because she was like 50 when she started treating me like shit. And like, I'm 56 and look at me.
So it's your sister? Do you have any other siblings?
No, just my sister.
Okay. What do you think it was about you with your grandma?
I don't know. I was a second grandchild. My sister is the first grandchild. My dad has two brothers. And after that, there was a boy. And then after that, there was twin boys. And then after that, there was more boys. So I think it was just, yeah, it was almost like a crime of opportunity. I was just the second born. I don't know. Like I did a mushroom trip at Christmas time, because I do a lot of psilocybin for healing. Mm-hmm. And there's something about my grandparents' basement. I don't know. I don't know. I haven't unpacked it. And I don't know that I need to. Like, I think I feel I'm at the stage of my healing where what I need to unpack is my reactions to things, because I'm never going to be able to change the past, but I can change this, you know? So I think the way that my father reacts and the way that my grandmother reacts is very much that you trust strangers more than you trust family, or you help strangers more than you, like strangers are more important than family. is the impression that I get. When I walked away from a company that I had built, I'd sold it, they never paid me. It's another story. But I was in debt a lot, and I left my only source of income. I was living by myself. I had a mortgage to pay. And I called my mom and I said, you know, I just walked away and I don't have an income and I'm going to sue them and I'm not eligible for EI, like unemployment insurance and all of that. And she said, well, we cannot loan you money because we just loaned our friends money. So they didn't have to dip into their RRSP, their retirement savings. So do not ask us for money. We're not going to help you. I was like, oh, okay. I wasn't asking for money, but now I know where I stand with my parents. Like, they would rather help some random person on the street than their family, right? And
Yeah.
It's important that they get acknowledged for
absolutely
for outside. Like, you know, they, when my mother was in the hospital after her heart attack, my sister was texting me the whole time, and she was like, you're not going to believe what he just said to me. You know, she's my mother. We don't know if she's going to live or not. And my dad is saying, yeah, we just gave $50,000 to such and such a charity, and we're thinking about giving more. And my sister's like, what the fuck? Like, what the fuck? Why is this coming up now? And I said, well, you know, you're not going to get it. Like, if they give $50,000 to me, I'm not going to put a plaque up in a public space saying that they gave me $50,000, right? But
like my dad, you know.
Yeah, it's so sad.
Yeah. How much older is your sister?
2 years, 2.5 years.
Okay. So then when did all this drinking stuff with your dad occur? And like, how did she know about it? And how you were just, do you think it's because you don't remember your childhood or because you were just like blind to it? Or did it happen before you were born?
Which, the drinking stuff, like the
DUI? Your dad.
Well, I just grew up in it. So I didn't know it was, right? I didn't know. Like, I was always the bartender.
Was it ever discussed?
In passing, maybe.
Okay.
My mother would say, yeah, your dad is drinking too much. And like, we knew, right? Because, you know, you go over, he used to drink rum and coke all the time. And it's like, and I was the bartender, like from 8 years old, from, you know, probably 7, 8 years old, I was the bartender. So he's like, you know, 2 fingers, 3 fingers, like the, you know, fingers were small. So, okay. Yeah, okay, I get it. But it kept getting more and more and more. And then he gave up rum for a little while. And then he just switched to wine. And he was going through, like we go over there, they always had, even in their house now, they have like a, he's a non-drinker. They have a room for wine. And he used to make his own wine, and he would just drink gallons of wine. And, you know, when he stopped, my sister just happened to, they were at their weekend home. He was driving on his way to the weekend home, and he got pulled over by the cops and they impounded his car.
When was this?
It was 7, 8 years ago, maybe. Okay. And he was drunk and drinking in the car, and which I think was quite common for him. Now that I look back on it, I'm like, okay, I can admit that now. But my sister and her husband just happened to be at the weekend place, and my dad called my mother, and my mother said, I'm not picking you up. Like, I'm not. And he was literally in the Rocky Mountains on the side of the highway, no car. So my sister and her husband drove to pick him up, and then they proceeded to tear apart the weekend home and found just wine bottles hidden everywhere.
And then he started going to AA. Was he court ordered?
He's never told me that. He's never, you know, as far as I'm concerned, as far as he's concerned, what I know is that he stopped drinking because it was affecting
his health.
Education. Yeah. So he stopped drinking for that reason. And he told me that they were here last year. And that's what he said to me. Cause he said, oh, you stopped drinking. I said, yeah, I just didn't, you know, I just want to be a better person. Like, I just want to be healthier and emotionally more stable. And like, I'm pretty open about, you know, I'm going to therapy. Clearly I don't go into detail. But you know, he said, oh, well, you know, good for you. Yeah. I stopped because it was affecting my medication. I'm like, sure.
Do you think your sister would know if it weren't for that?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't think so. We just don't, we don't share. I grew up in a house full of secrets. There was all secrets, you know?
So What was your sister's experience growing up? Like you were, I mean, you got it from your grandma, but were you kind of the black sheep?
Yeah.
With your parents too? Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, my dad still shames me. I'm divorced, once divorced, my second marriage. My dad still shames me inadvertently for being divorced. Like he'll say things like, oh, so-and-so's son just got divorced. He must be so ashamed of himself. And I'm like, oh.
What the fuck?
And yeah. I should tell you, I'm going to tell you a really horrible story.
Please.
my dad loves these charity mm-hmm. networking groups mm-hmm. and stuff. And so he invited me to this father-daughter lunch, you know, so that the fathers in the group could introduce their daughters and say they're so proud of themselves. And so it was during Calgary Stampede. And we're sitting at this big round table and he arrives and he's drunk already, right? Like I was meeting him there because I had to work. So he was drunk already. And I was like, oh, that's shitty. He drove, right? And then he proceeded to drink more wine. And at the table, everybody's talking about, oh, so what do you do? And at the time I was working at a really interesting job. I was working as a private label formulator for Bath and Body, right? And so I said that. And so he was like, oh my God, that's so interesting. And so then we talked about that for a little bit. And then my dad said, yeah, it's amazing. Slurring his speech. It's amazing that she became anything because she was such a loser in high school.
Oh my God.
And everyone at the table just looked at me and I was like, I felt like I was going to vomit. I was like, I don't know where to go in this conversation. So I wanted to disappear. I just shut down. I stopped talking to anybody. And then like, I walked him to his car and I was like, Dad, you can't drive. You cannot drive. You're so drunk. He's like, I'm fine. I'm fine. And I stood there and I'm like, I don't know what to do. And I regret letting him drive, but I didn't, I honestly, I was like so lost. I was so lost. He got home fine. Continued to drive drunk for years after that. I don't know that for sure, but like, that's how I grew up, right? Like, because I don't remember a lot of growing up, I can only assume because of the way they treat me now, that's exactly what happened when I was a kid, right? Fucked up. A lot of conversations around the Christmas dinner table about who gets what, you know, like with all the nieces and nephews. And I freak out. I'm like, why are we talking about this? This is so, like, is this what this is about? Mm-hmm. Like, are we here to enable you so that we get better things when you die? Because I don't want to play that game.
How did the impact of your childhood, how would you describe it manifesting in adulthood?
I've always, what I was saying the other day about big feelings in group, I was talking about big feelings. Everybody's like, oh, you're reacting. You have such big feelings. You're overreacting. You're mm-hmm. like, no, I'm reacting. Like mm-hmm. they're only big. It's only an overreaction because you don't understand what I'm saying. I think I've always had reactions. I had a situation where my stepson, my 32-year-old stepson, was living with us. Mm-hmm. And some of the stuff he did, certainly boundary crossing, certainly I didn't feel respected, which would be normal. But the way that I reacted was so over the top. Mm-hmm. And this happened shortly after I came back from seeing my mother after her heart attack, before I went into recovery. I can remember feeling like I was having an out-of-body experience. Like I was standing in the kitchen screaming at him for something really small. And inside my head, I'm like, what is wrong with you? You are your, like, this is not a normal reaction. Calm the fuck down. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't. Mm-hmm. Like it was, someone else was driving the bus, right? Like, mm-hmm. and that was like, I used to work with Barb Nagle and she said like generations of people before you were driving that bus in that moment, right? And it's true. And that's when the whole adult child thing, like we are a product of our environment. We are a product of our upbringing. We don't have control over this. We don't choose to be this way. And that's when it became really evident to me. Mm.
So it's been a little over a year that you've been like doing ACA and really working on these issues. What has this experience been like for you?
Painful, mm-hmm. horrible. Lovely, amazing, opening, hopeful, pretty much all the emotions that, you know, they outline in the back of the big red book that you're supposed to study so you understand them. That's pretty much all been there for me. I'm very grateful to have found it. I I'm very grateful to have found ACA. You know, all those years of wondering what was wrong with me. Am I crazy? Am I worthless? It all makes sense now that I'm in ACA, and now that I feel seen and heard by so many people that are going through something similar to me and are open to talking about it, because I think we're all attracted to people who have similar trauma to us, right? I don't think chemistry is some mysterious energy that is floating around in the air. I can finish people's sentences and they can finish mine because we've been in the same, right? But some people don't acknowledge that this shit is real. Some people see that this is actually an issue for them. And so they deny it, right? But the people that I'm meeting through ACA and through your group are people who know themselves, not afraid to look at it. They're not afraid to see it. And that's been the most valuable thing.
I want you to share what you shared the other day about the interaction that you had with your husband and not taking his feelings.
Yeah, that's huge. Well, I'm going through something with a friend right now too. And
do tell.
I feel sometimes like the recovery happens so fast, right? It seems so slow, but it's like, since that day that I shared that, we had a fight in the car on the way to work, and it was about something small. And the first thing I said to myself, I said it out loud, was, I am not going to respond to that. And then inside my head, one of my inner family members, most likely my teenager, was saying, you'd better say something. You'd better say something about that. You're going to say something about that, right? And then I said, like, you shouldn't have said that. That really hurt my feelings, you know? And then what happened was he reacted again and said something to me. And I thought to myself, like, I saw it clear as day. Like, it is not my issue. This is your issue. And I love him. And he's an amazing man. But I have to own what's mine, and I have to be able to compartmentalize it, right? So with this friend right now, it's through my business, she owes me a little bit of money. I'm trying to get her to pay me. And it's been like since June. And I keep saying, like, you got to do this, you got to do this. And she is an adult child. She's not in ACA or anything like that. She's doing her own recovery path. But she has avoided this for a long, long time. And then, like, just yesterday, I set up an appointment to meet with her about it and just like, let's get this solved. And she flaked out on me. And I'm like, okay, this is not my issue. This is your issue. And my husband and I were talking about it this morning, and because things like that can still derail me. Like, I still haven't, I have work to do, but I can't work now because I have this appointment at 4 o'clock, and then all day is leading up to it. And then I can't get anything done because I'm thinking about how I'm going to react and what I'm going to do. And in the moment that those thoughts are happening, I can recognize that there's a better path, but I don't know it yet. I haven't formed it yet. So that's progress for sure, but I still can't get anything done. And then Dom, my husband, said to me this morning, like, you spent the entire day when you could have been working just worrying about that. He said, I think you need to be done with that friendship. And I'm like, yeah, so too.
It's so hard.
Yeah, hard. Yeah. And then you turn the corner like that in that song, when you see the Southern Cross, when you actually see it, you know, it's like, okay, no, this is unhealthy. This is unhealthy, right? For me. So got to be done. Got to move on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've talked a lot in therapy about the difference between isolation and solitude. Because sometimes I think there's not a lot of difference, except that solitude, you're okay with being alone, and isolation, you're pushing everyone away so that you are alone, right? But it's still a bit of a semantic argument in my head, the difference. So still kind of figuring that out, still reconciling that part of it.
So talk about what your experience has been like being part of this community.
Yeah, I realized a long time ago that in order to have successful relationships, I had to learn to be vulnerable. I think to be successful in anything, you have to learn to be vulnerable, but also with boundaries, right? So in this community, I find everybody is so vulnerable and so honest with themselves. You know, like the other day, I don't think I should talk about specific members. Somebody came in hot to a meeting, and I was really upset. And then I was upset by what he had said. And the next day he came in and apologized. And I was like, fuck, that's so fucking amazing to admit that you're wrong about something and just be vulnerable. Like, that is level of understand, like self-knowledge. That's what I want to see, right? That's what I'm here for. That's what I'm here for. Some of the people that I've connected with, I'm pretty new to the community, but some of the people that I've connected with, I'm so glad. And
yeah, everyone's great. Well, this has been so lovely. Oh, I got two more questions for you. Three things you like about yourself.
Well, I really love song lyrics.
That doesn't count.
Yes, it does.
I really like that I like song lyrics.
Yeah, no. That's, yes, yes. I no. loved it. I no. loved it when she said that, and I totally appreciate that, and I'm down with that. But okay, so the things that I've learned to really like about myself are the things that are results of the laundry list. Like, I love my hypervigilance because it makes me an awesome event planner. I can plan the shit out of any event. So I love that about myself.
I can plan the shit out of any event. I love it.
Anticipate everyone's needs. And mm-hmm. I'm so good at it. I love that I am a survivor. Mm-hmm. And I love that I am open to improving myself and understanding myself more. That's really, really important. Mm. Yeah.
Hope or dream for the future.
I just hope that I can always keep moving forward and keep asking questions. I never want to stop asking questions.
Me neither. That's why I do my job.
Yeah.
Professional question asker. Professional busybody. Let it all go. What's making you slow now? Let it all go.